In my entire life gaming, I have never considered a lawn chair in front of the TV. That's such a smart idea. That's so much comfier than like
I had one of those gaming chairs, but I had to throw it away for certain reasons. I don't want to know. Top secret stuff.
Secret Movie Clubbers, and welcome to Secret Movie Club Podcast 28, where we have made the daring, controversial, hopefully stimulating decision to continue talking about Star Wars, including all of what are considered the prequels, episodes 1, 2, and 3. And then, as Connor just reminded me, not only do we have what would maybe be considered the sequel trilogy, episodes 7, 8, and 9, but also all the expanded universe movies, of which there are
two live action. There's technically an animated film, but I haven't seen that.
Rogue One and Solo.
Yeah, we had to do another one because always two there are, no more, no less.
So there you go, guys. But basically, maybe as more of a unifying thematic conceptualization here at the beginning of this podcast, we're talking about everything that Star Wars became after the original trilogy, which, and I want you guys to take me to task, which, if in some weird universe we were just talking about narrative and not money, George Lucas could have stopped right there. And it would have been a fully contained kind of Lord of the Rings trilogy. But it didn't. There was a 20-year gap, essentially. Let's see, 16 years, sorry.
And we kind of talked about that gap a little bit last time. Daniel, I think you're the only one with real experience. During that gap, there was a lot of expanded universe stuff, like books and video games and things like that.
So let's pick up right there. But before we pick up in between 4, 5, and 6 and 1, 2, and 3, who's with us on the podcast today?
Hi, it's Daniel. I just want to apologize again for this.
Now this is podcasting. Hello there. It's Connor.
Oh, I'm here. You know, just me. That's it.
Okay. That was very zen. my name's Craig. I'm the programmer, founder of Secret Movie Club. So Secret Movie Clubbers, this weekend, I don't know how you're doing. I hope you're doing well. I actually am in pretty good spirits and consider myself, all things considered, having had a pretty lucky COVID experience, I have to say. Now, it's not over. And Herodotus said in relating a story of the wise man Solon to King Croesus, count no man lucky until the end is known. And that's important. So anything could happen. Nevertheless, you know, we've been getting through COVID. I know you've been getting through COVID. But lest you thought things couldn't get any crazier, in later episodes of COVID here in California, the Los Angeles area, we had two major wildfires, which were just part of a whole spate of wildfires that erupted during fire season up and down the West Coast. I think I heard something called like lightning fires or thunderclap fires. Those also are happening, which turned San Francisco's skies nuclear blood red. So there was never really daytime in San Francisco for about a week. Then September's not even done, but we had the death of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg just yesterday. I think in all seriousness, rest in peace, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Incredibly strong and concise and assertive and reasoned justice. Although many people on different sides of the political spectrum might take different views of that.
Let's hope she wasn't the only thing holding our country together.
So we just had that yesterday. And September's not done. Usually in politics, there's what's called the October surprise. And we haven't even hit October. So,
and we had a big ass earthquake.
Oh, yeah. And we had an earthquake. I forgot about that. We had an earthquake on Friday. So if you have your bingo card, you can cross off earthquakes and blood red firestorms. I don't know if the death of a Supreme Court justice is on that bingo card, but if it is, you might be close to bingo.
That's the free space.
That's there you go. But we decided we were just going to end September with a disaster derby series at our parking lot cinema. So Friday, we are doing War of the Worlds in Cloverfield, where aliens destroy the world. On Saturday, we're doing Armageddon and Airplane, where an asteroid threatens to destroy the world and only a hotshot team of oil riggers can go into space to try to blow it up. While internecine family drama between Papa Bruce Willis, his protege Ben Affleck, and his love interest, aka Bruce Willis's daughter, Liv Tyler, and the real daughter of Steven Tyler, who provided the pop hit song for the movie, drama ensues. Also, co-written by J.J. Abrams. Abrams, I found out today. We matched that with Airplane, one of my favorite comedies. I hope it still holds up for all of you guys, but often considered one of the greatest American comedies of all time, which now quaintly is referencing a disaster era genre of the 70s where just one airplane would be in disaster up in the skies. At the time, that seemed catastrophic. Now the idea of just one airplane being in trouble somehow seems like a quaint disaster. And then Sunday we wanted to end it with an upcurve. We're doing Pixar's The Incredibles, where a family saves the world from multiple disasters. But they say, well, I don't want to ruin it for you, but there's the hope that it can be saved, which I still embrace. We're going to get through this. You can always write us at community@secretmovieclub.com and podcast@secretmovieclub.com. Also next week, because this is the last time we'll be able to plug it, you're going to get to hear Daniel's Secret Movie Club Radio Hour Episode 3, The Ballad of the Sin Eater, which I believe is going to drop the last day of September, but just look for it next week. And we are hard at work on our Halloween episode. And God willing, we are going to announce all our October screenings next Monday, September, 28th? I'm looking at my calendar. September 28th at 1 p.m. So get ready for a deluge of horror titles, family-friendly, spooky titles, all playing at the Parking Lot Cinema through Halloween.
You better be good, man.
Oh, yeah.
Holding you up to it, man.
Spookies has been programmed every single day. It's just spookies upon spookies upon spookies.
Wow. Double features, spookies, and then spookies again.
Spookies too, y'all.
We cone off the exits and spookies one more time.
Yeah, and then we get people dressed up as different spookies. So we have a Grim Reaper spooky. And what are the mud monster destroyed by red wine spookies?
I can read on Letterboxd the list of every spookies that's in the film spookies.
We are now going to talk about what Star Wars became, because in a way, and I think actually a very layered, complex way, Star Wars presaged, if you will, where the movie industry was going. Not only did it introduce an era of blockbusters, which, again, talking about quaint, the idea of a trilogy now seems quaint, but it actually would come to embody everything that would happen to the film industry through our very current moment. So, Daniel, Return of the Jedi plays in 1983. Toys are bought. A series comes to a close. A father and son are reconciled. Ewoks are released. A tyranny returns to a republic, but that wasn't it. What happened from there?
Well, 7 years later, I was born, and then somewhere along the way, George Lucas was like, what if we wanted to know what Darth Vader was like as a little boy? And then we jump ahead to 1999, and we get to find out.
You guys probably know it, being big Star Wars-ophiles, but actually, there were TV movies that happened in the 80s. There was one weird TV movie about these kids separated from their parents on a planet.
Was there an Ewok
with
thing?
With Ewoks, yeah.
There was an Ewok, movie. There was, we didn't even talk about the Star Wars Christmas special, which happened between...
I put a little clip of it in my pre-show the other week.
Which clip?
It was the clip from the middle where it was just the Wookiees talking for like several minutes, where they're just...
Was it Mama Wookiee and Baby Wookiee?
Mama Wookiee, Baby Wookiee, and Grandpa Wookiee.
If anybody doesn't know about the Star Wars Christmas special, I do have to say, maybe I'll save this for another time. I almost feel like I've told this story on a pod, but I don't know. Secret Movie Club, before it became what it is now, was just friends showing each other things they'd probably never seen. And one of my friends had, I don't know how he got this, a bootleg of the live cast of the Star Wars Christmas special with the commercials from 1978. So it ran 3 hours. We watched it, and I smoked pot a handful of times between the ages of 27 and 32. That was one of the last times I ever did. I think I was 30, 31. And I actually had such an incredible experience. I was like, I'm done. But that was basically the last time I ever tried anything this side of the border. But that experience was so incredible that I'll save that for a story another time or the end of this one. I don't know. Who knows? There were TV shows, the Christmas special, which George Lucas tried to bury and erase, but he can't now in the age of the endless reproduction. And then when did they make the announcement that the prequels were going to happen?
I don't remember. I feel like it was after the re-releases in 97, and then a trailer would have probably popped up in like 98. I mean, people knew, Lucas had talked about wanting to do it for years, and I know he had made an announcement that it was going to happen in in the 90s.
By the time Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi had come out, they were being called episodes 4, yeah. 5, and 6.
So it was known that we were seeing the end of the story at the time. I think the special editions were sort of this stomping ground to test sort of some technology that he wanted to use in episode 1. And so he kind of went back to tweak with the original movies to test a lot of the tech that he would then go on to use. Including things that had never really been done, like, regardless of thoughts on Jar Jar Binks, like, the technology that created him was sort of unheard of at the time.
Like, the technology that would eventually give us Gollum and Andy Serkis's great creations, the sort of actor in a mocap suit who would be replaced by a digital character. But also, too, not to give this short shrift, also, there were a bunch of books, weren't there?
Books, video games, tabletop games, comics. Comics was a big thing. Actually, funnily enough, the comics, Star Wars comics, were published by Marvel, you know, decades before Marvel and Star Wars would end up being under the same umbrella anyways.
All of this is happening to sort of feed the hunger that Star Wars fans in the 80s and 90s had for the continuance of the story. So in fairness, I mean, the demand was huge. People wanted Star Wars narrative.
And I think, to be fair to George Lucas, I think there always was kind of an implication that the prequel movies would happen at some point.
Yeah, totally.
That those stories existed.
And in fairness to Lucas, it was a bold move, which he'd sort of signaled a little bit in the Indiana Jones trilogy when Temple of Doom happened a year before Raiders of the Lost Ark. And you could almost miss that that was the case. But he was doing this thing where instead of going forward, which would be the natural thing, sequels, he was actually going backwards to begin the story, which in a way, I think you can totally legitimately argue was a bold narrative decision. So 1999, Phantom Menace drops. It was directed by Lucas, who had not directed since A New Hope, basically 22 years before. He wrote and directed it. It was also the last movie Lucas would ever do on film. He would direct two more, but those would be all digital.
Yeah, so after the Phantom Menace was released in 1999, that's episode 1, and Phantom Menace sort of focuses on establishing all of the characters that we would, or several of the characters that we would know later on in the original series in the timeline, but they're sort of younger selves setting up for what would happen in the prequels, notably Anakin, who would later become Darth Vader as a young boy, and Obi-Wan Kenobi as like a young Jedi.
With a little Yoda.
A little Yoda, some C-3PO, R2-D2, some other characters. And then in the same cycle, like 3 years later, then 3 years again, episode 2, Attack of the Clones, and episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, came out, which sort of show the story of Anakin becoming Darth Vader and the rise of the Empire from the former Republic.
And so, Phantom Menace, thoughts?
When I was 9 years old, my mom, this came out, I can't remember if it was I think it was like a week before school ended in Oklahoma, and she pulled me out of school on the Friday to take me, saying it was a doctor's appointment, which as a 9 year old stressed me out, because I didn't know I had to go to the doctor, and then instead we went to the theater to see it. And it's, you know, it's the only thing anyone talked about, and it was like life-changing to see something new. And then as I've gotten older, I mean, I have a real soft spot for these, regardless of, I can pick a lot of things that don't work and this and that, but there's something about them. They feel completely different. I think that's sort of the unique part of the Star Wars canon, is every era feels like it's this little, its own little bubble. And I like that, because you sort of like them for different reasons and they do different things. And I think Connor and I have talked about this at length, but they're sort of so ambitious in what they're trying to do, whether or not we think they succeeded it. But it's like these politically charged dramas that are for kids, which seems unfair because it's quite dense sometimes. And about like the fall of power and like men, and it's got a lot going on conceptually.
I revisited basically all of these movies the last couple of weeks. I revisited the original trilogy a week and a half ago. I revisited all the prequels this last week and most of the sequel era films. And from my point of view, the prequels are better. Because I've talked in the past about how I don't like viewing things as like objective when it comes to art and film. And personally, I just enjoy these more because they're definitely almost mesmerizingly ineptly made at times. But how could I hate movies this poorly made, you know? It's like I was talking to a friend and the comparisons we came up with. I came up with this one, is that the prequels feel like a community theater production put on by a bunch of 10-year-olds with dementia, but boy, are they singing their hearts out. They're just giving it their all. And the sequel era films, to blend our conversation a little bit, my friend described as joyless plate spinning. Now, I think now for me, there's an exception. For both of us, there's one exception to that. But there's something about the prequels that, as Daniel was saying, is like weird and ambitious. Even the stuff that doesn't work, I kind of like it. Maybe in the same way that I like certain good, bad stuff, even though I don't like using that term. But also, you know, one of the things that's most obviously pointed to a lot of the times with the prequels is like Jar Jar Binks, who's this really annoying character in the first movie. I can see on paper he's supposed to be almost like a Buster Keaton-esque thing, where he's like in the last scenes of the movie, he's kind of slip-slopping around and like in like a battlefield and caught like Mr. Magoo in his way through everything. But to have that stuff in your first movie and then in the next movie have that goofy comic relief character be a cog in the machine that creates the evil empire, and to have that little goofy kid 2.5 movies later slaughtering children and getting his legs cut off and burning alive. I don't know. There's something weird and transgressive and very interesting about these movies.
So we've got Phantom Menace, then Attack of the Clones, and Revenge of the Sith. And that was episodes 1, 2, and 3. And as everyone's talked about, really, it's the story of the fall of Anakin Skywalker, who becomes Darth Vader. And it's really plays as a tragedy.
And the rise of the Empire.
And the rise of the Empire. So that's really the arc of the three. And as Connor was saying, we meet some characters that are going to play huge roles in at least 6 of them, some of them in 9 of them. So, for instance, we meet Palpatine, who is the Emperor, who basically is the most evil, uses the dark side of the Force probably the most cynically, and he's going to be in all 3 trilogies. But going with Phantom Menace, Daniel, you can jump around Phantom, Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith. What are your feelings about the prequels?
They mean something to me because I was 9 to 15 when they came out. So to me and my friends, they were huge events. And I feel like for a different generation, maybe the generation right below Connor and I, perhaps Edwin's generation, they grew up on them as sometimes their first Star Wars experience. So they're special to people. And I think especially now, in the height of with social media and a lot of social media sites, they have been sort of reevaluated by young people as something they love, and they like make fun of them lovingly, and they quote them and watch them, and meme culture has taken them to a new level.
That's kind of how I feel about them, Daniel, honestly.
They've sort of been taken back by a younger generation of fans as something that they do love. And I find that very charming, and it makes me appreciate them a little bit differently to look at how people are loving them, especially to compare them to the way that I might have loved the original when I was a little bit younger, because I was still young when I saw these. And I loved these at the time. I still do. I still have no problem watching them, you know, every so often.
I think specifically, just to talk about them specifically, Phantom Menace has a couple of really incredible sequences. I think the Darth Maul fight at the end of the movie,
one of the best sequences of the entire 9 movies, I think.
I also really enjoy the pod racing sequence. I think is a really good, like, exciting chase. And I think Revenge of the Sith is a really solid movie that I would put. There's like 5 Star Wars movies I really like, and that's one of them. The latter half of that movie is kind of heartbreaking. It's just awful stuff happening. There's the Order 66 sequence where Palpatine, now in control, orders the murder of all the Jedis by the people who the Jedi thought were their allies. And we just cut around the universe to see all these Jedi characters, some of which we kind of know, some of which we know less, over the last prequel film, just getting like murdered by their allies.
Different generations and fan culture, and this is very human, have a tendency to see works through the prism of their experience and their sense of having proprietary ownership on something. But in reality, depending on your age, the movies would have hit you totally differently. So the prequels, you can argue, if you're just trying to be empirical, would have only been horrible if you were somebody who had a proprietary sense about New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, and you had expectation. But if you were a little kid and you were seeing Phantom Menace, that movie almost feels like it's aimed at little kids. It's about a little kid. And you might see it and be like, what an amazing adventure. Like, this is the start of an amazing adventure. And it might actually be elitist and a bit unfair for a prior generation to have been so blind to the fact that it was geared to someone differently. So I just want to play devil's advocate. And what I'm saying is I'm coming from the point of view where a lot of older people, when Phantom Menace came out, they all went to see it and thought it was awful. It was filled with computer effects. Jar Jar Binks annoyed the heck out of everybody. The Force was suddenly turned into like some genetic bloodline thing where Qui-Gon could like check your midichlorian count or whatever that thing was, instead of tapping into an omnipresent thing that anybody could tap into. So a lot of people who had understood the movies in a certain way felt that Lucas had totally betrayed what was good about the trilogy. Nevertheless, what you guys are saying, and I picked up on it too in the three, even though I'll just come out right and say, I'm not really a fan of the prequels. I love the Duel of the Fates sound cue by John Williams. I love the Darth Maul saber fight. I think that's great. And I also tip my hat to what you were saying, Connor. I actually tip my hat to the political subtext, which is how a republic descends into tyranny, dictatorship, and fascism.
It's interesting that Revenge of the Sith came out in 2005, the same year as War of the Worlds in Munich. Revenge of the Sith also feels like a angry about the Iraq war movie.
And we should probably contextualize that even though, I don't want to get totally off topic, but in a weird way, even though more current events, I would say, have superseded the feeling people had post 9/11 that our country was going down the tubes a little bit. There were a lot of people who felt that we overreacted in 9/11 and started two foreign wars that were, one of which we're still in, Afghanistan, and we still have a presence in Iraq. A lot of people were not up on George W. Bush, who was president from 2001 to 2008. Now, in comparison, a number of folks feel that Bush was, strangely, by comparison with our current president, Donald Trump, at least, you know, a different kind of politician. But nevertheless, I mean, we're going to get into political wars and partisan stuff, and I don't want to. But it is fair to say that the prequels have a very political bent to them, that if you're watching them, they're actually not just a money grab. They're actually, weirdly, Lucas seems to be saying something about a republic. I don't remember anything about Attack of the Clones other than there's a scene where Anakin and Natalie Portman, who felt totally wasted in the three movies to me, are like romancing each other. And then he jumps on a space rhino and ass surfs it down some kind of grass slide, and they fall and they kiss. And there's an American Graffiti reference where Anakin goes into like Mel's diner on a planet or something and talks to a cook. I don't really remember anything about Attack of the Clones other than I found it totally forgettable.
Well, Attack of the Clones is the worst of them, I think, pretty easily. I don't know if you agree with that, Daniel.
I find it more entertaining. I think it's worse, but it has so many more like little beats that I think are just fascinating.
I agree. I mean, the thing about Attack of the Clones is it doesn't have as solid of a arc is the other two prequels as a focus, because the characters are kind of like Empire. The characters are split up. And so there's Obi-Wan's story where he's the worst detective and he's going around and trying to figure out this like mystery about this person who tried to assassinate Padme, Natalie Portman's character. And then at the same time, the other plot is Anakin and Padme sort of falling in love, and Anakin trying to save his mother, who's still a slave back on Tatooine.
Attack of the Clones, correct me if I'm wrong, also has Christopher Lee, and it has like a Yoda lightsaber fight.
That's like the Obi-Wan stuff. The plot he's investigating, there's this group of separatists kind of involving the more overt bad guys from the first prequel. And you're seeing it, but characters aren't confirming it, that the war on one side is being sort of manipulated by Chancellor Palpatine. And then on the other side, the separatists are being manipulated by Darth Sidious, who we know is the same person. And so we're sort of seeing how the Sith are kind of manipulating these wars in order to take power.
And the Sith are the Jedis that have decided to use the dark side of the Force, which really becomes metaphorical for sort of cynical power grabs, I would probably say.
Christopher Lee plays Count Dooku, who is sort of the leader of the Separatists, but what he really is he's the then apprentice to Palpatine.
That's Attack of the Clones, which really ostensibly is also the love story about the parents of Luke and Leia that we'll come to know in 4, 5, and 6.
None of that works.
No, as far as what I remember.
Talking about things that, in terms of people doing their job, my favorite thing that I realized about Attack of the Clones is that the assassination attempt is someone hiring a bounty hunter who hires another bounty hunter who uses a robot who sends out bugs to try and perform an assassination. Like, the tier to get a job done is so stupidly elongated that no one can do their job correctly, and it just fails on every avenue, that I find that fascinating. In the same way that Obi-Wan's trying to figure things out in the weirdest ways of, like, I'll go here alone to fix this. this type of thing.
Yeah, well, Obi-Wan goes to, like, a place, and they're like, welcome, Master Jedi. We're here to show your new clones. He's like, what clones? like, play along, buddy. like, what are you doing?
Then we get to Revenge of the Sith, which everybody knew going into it would have to be one of the darkest Star Wars movies, because everyone knew that Anakin was going to become Darth Vader. So you knew you were going to see that in the third one. Interestingly, with the third one, Daniel, do you know how many minutes were directed by Spielberg?
No.
I think it's mostly the opening action sequences were like kind of pre-vised by him.
There was this weird trend, which I don't hear happening as much anymore, but it happened in Sin City and it happened in a few others, where a director would invite their buddy director to direct a scene. And so in Sin City, Tarantino directs like a car scene. And then in Revenge of the Sith, Steven Spielberg directs the opening action sequence, which weirdly plays better than some of the other action sequences. I remember seeing Revenge of the Sith.
That's so good.
And being like, oh, wow, there's a lot of cross-cutting. There's some humor. They're like getting a lot out of R2-D2. This kind of feels like, oh, it was directed by Steven Spielberg. But anyway, but not to damn it with fan praise. So Revenge of the Sith, as you guys are talking about, goes pretty dark. What do you guys feel about the last movie of the prequels, where we see Anakin become this man who is maimed, separated from his family, totally gives into the dark side of the Force?
I think it's the best one of the prequels.
Yeah, it's I would say it's better than some of the several of the new spinoffs and one of the sequels as well. It feels cohesive in a way that the first two prequels don't in quite the same way. And it has a tone through it, partially because it's so dark. Because we know what's coming. I think it's effective if you don't know what's coming, but knowing what's coming, every sort of avenue, every twist it takes just adds something different. You know, you learn that Padme's pregnant, and so you know what's coming, but then you wonder, well, how does that dictate? Because we know that Darth Vader, or that Luke doesn't know who his father is, so they're going to be split up somehow. And we have all these little details knowing what's to come that sort of play into what we are adding on to the tragedy at hand. There's some type of the heart in it, knowing that we've spent two movies with these two people, with Obi-Wan and Anakin, and watching them not only fall apart in a fairly short span of time in movie time, but watching them literally fight to the death, and the struggle of that, I think is really interesting.
I think it has the best performances in the prequels too. Not that they're incredible or anything, but I think Ewan McGregor, especially in the latter two, kind of fully comes into that role a little bit. He probably comes off the best out of all the actors. And even though he's totally hammy, I really like Ian McDiarmid in Revenge of the Sith as Palpatine. All his little, like, do it. And the I am the Senate.
Because, as Connor said, they split up the characters in Attack of the Clones, except for some action scenes where they're together. You spend a lot of time sort of separating Anakin and Obi-Wan, and the third one opens with them together and then splits them up again. And so there's a lot of time for Anakin to look to a father figure who is, because he doesn't have a father, in Senator Palpatine's character. So the manipulation comes from someone manipulating. We've seen him manipulate, you know, two sides of an army, of a war, to his advantage, manipulating one person who he knows is already compromised because of the trauma of his youth to turn him. And they really don't hold back, because you have shots that are now memed forever, but there's a shot of Anakin as the Jedi are starting to be killed during the Order 66 scene. Anakin enters a temple where all these, like, young 6-year-old Jedi have begun their training, and they're like, you know, Master Skywalker, like, what do we do? And Anakin looks at them and ignites his lightsaber.
And it cuts like a close-up of his face, and there's just like tears coming down.
Later that comes back to play, because you see Obi-Wan and Yoda like discover that he has done this, and they can't fathom that it was done. And I think that's pretty ballsy for like a blockbuster, where you're supposed to feel any empathy toward this character, and you've just learned that he slaughtered untold amount of people and children.
The movies were hits. It's not like they bombed. They definitely inaugurated a whole new era of Star Wars and characters. But then I think they wrapped up in 2005. Is that it? And so then some years pass. And in this interim, so many things happen. But probably the big strokes, and I'll throw it back to you, is that Lucas eventually decides to sell Lucasfilm to Disney. And Disney really changes the face of our industry by making a number of huge purchases. Disney purchases Lucasfilm. They purchase Marvel. They purchase 21st Century Fox. which in a weird way, talking about like a Palpatine playing both sides off a war. Not only do they get Star Wars, but they also get the original Star Wars, which they at first didn't have the rights to when they acquired 21st Century Fox and Lucasfilm. So now Disney has it. And what has happened in the interim is that the MCU has introduced this idea of expanded universe movie making, which is that you can have Avengers movies, but then you can also have trilogies with individual characters. You can also have one-offs. And why make three movies when you can make 23 movies? And you can have movies coming out like every season, and it's going to be a juggernaut because everyone's going to want to see the next movie. And Marvel had did it, you know, whether or not you're a fan of that kind of movie making, I do think most people who are filmmakers have to tip their hats and say, Marvel pulled it off. What Marvel set out to do with an expanded universe where it's almost like a 23-episode edition of a comic book or something, they pulled off. But then everybody else saw it, and now we're in the midst of this, like, 10 Star Wars movies, TV shows, The Mandalorian, da-da-da. Avatar went from one movie to, is it four movies, guys, or five?
Four.
Yeah, I think there are four Avatars, which we've only seen one, but three are shooting consecutively, all directed by James Cameron.
I don't believe any of that until I see it.
Oh, no, it's five. There's four sequels in production.
Yep, there you go. So we're going to get five total Avatars. Now we get to episodes 7, 8, and 9, along with the two one-off movies, Rogue One and Solo. And interestingly, J.J. Abrams comes on board to do what would come to be known as Episode 7, The Force Awakens. And we get some news that excites the whole Star Wars community. Abrams is going to write and direct it. People have a lot of goodwill for Abrams for what he did with Star Trek, what he did with the Mission Impossible series. People have goodwill that it's going to be shot on film. We're told there's going to be a lot of practical effects and location shooting and Muppets. Abrams seems to have gotten the memo that, hey, I'm going to go back to 4, 5, and 6 as my inspiration, but I'm going to honor 1, 2, and 3, but my aesthetic is going to be 4, 5, and 6. We get episodes 7, 8, and 9, which are called collectively The Force Awakens, The Last Jedi, and The Rise of Skywalker. And the last thing to know is that they are announced. Kathleen Kennedy, the famous producer, takes over Lucasfilm, and she puts a hotshot director on each movie. So rather than what Lucas did, which was kind of go the way of the craftsmen with Irving Kirshner and Richard Marquand, although Kirshner kills it with Empire Strikes Back, Kathleen Kennedy hires J.J. Abrams, Rian Johnson hot off of Looper, and Colin Trevorrow hot off of Jurassic World, and they're each going to write and direct their movie. So she's going an auteur route.
And for the spinoffs as well.
Rogue One is going to be done by Gareth Edwards, is that right?
Yeah.
Fresh off of Godzilla. And Solo originally is going to be done by Philip Lord and Chris Miller.
Off of 21 and 22 Jump Street.
Yeah, the comedic geniuses and the Lego movies, I believe.
You say that that one didn't work out. I think most of these didn't work out in different ways.
Yeah, so we're going to dive into it. But nevertheless, understand that there was a bold idea that these movies were going to give all these fresh young voices their chance to add to the Star Wars universe, and we were going to get these exciting movies.
Disney buys Lucasfilm in 2013, and they announced that a new Star Wars movie is going to come out. I had just finished film school, and Star Wars is sort of the reason I got into movies, so my now wife at the time said something that broke me, where I was like, yeah, they're going to make new Star Wars. And she said something along the lines of, oh, that's crazy. The thing that got you into movies, you can potentially now contribute to.
These movies don't exist in a vacuum. They have to interact alchemically with the culture at the time. And the culture at the time that 7, 8, and 9 came out was light years advanced, or you could say kind of regressive advancement, in how the internet interacts. So by the time we get to the 2010s, these movies are being announced at Comic-Con, which has become a huge thing. The internet is sort of analyzing and dissecting every single bit of info that's coming out about them.
Force Awakens was okay. I loved it. I saw it in theaters at Huntington Park with a friend, high school. It was good. Last Jedi is great as well. It's probably my personal favorite out of all of them. The Rise of Skywalker, can go f*** itself. I hate that movie with a passion. I know the studio or whoever's in charge cut a lot of it, which I've heard, and really ignores a lot from Last Jedi, which pisses me off. I just didn't like Last Skywalker. So if you have any hate mail, I don't care. I'm not going to respond to you. I don't care. I don't know you.
The third movie was actually meant to be directed by Colin Trevorrow. When was he dropped? That was pretty early on.
I think after his follow-up to Jurassic World called The Book of Eli was released to...
And did very bad.
Yeah.
The combination of that and the reception to Last Jedi.
There's not really a confirmed thing, but that's sort of the suspicion that Disney wanted to pivot because they were worried about reception and if he could pull it off with whatever script he had given in.
Already there are these rumblings that something is not right with this execution plan because Trevorrow gets replaced. Gareth Edwards, actually, the whole last third of Rogue One, even though it's often considered one of the greatest of the new era, the whole last third of Rogue One was reshot without him. The comedy team of Philip Lord and Chris Miller is replaced, and with Ron Howard.
Daniel, do you want to explain the plot of the new sequels?
Yeah, so the Force Awakens is essentially kind of a, it borrows heavily from A New Hope, but it's about that following the fall of the Empire in the 30 years since a new empire called the First Order has risen as things sort of just move back into place. And the rebels are gone. They are now the resistance, but they're a much smaller group, still led by Leia. And we learn that Luke Skywalker has vanished because Kylo Ren, who is the son of... His name is Ben Solo. He is the son of Leia and Han. He has betrayed Luke and taken a bunch of his... has destroyed Luke's Jedi Temple, where he wanted to start a new generation of Jedi, and has left with a group of his followers to assist the First Order and sort of take back power because he worships Darth Vader, this philosophy. And Rey, who is this nobody on another desert planet, similar to Luke, is brought into things by a First Order defector named Finn and a pilot, a rebel or a resistance pilot that Finn helps escape from the First Order named Poe, and they kind of become our core team. It's Poe, Rey, and Finn, and it's sort of their adventure to take down another planet destroying device.
This one's bigger.
It's a whole planet.
It's a newish thing called a legacy sequel, meaning a sequel that takes place in the same continuity as the old movies but sort of focuses on new characters and is oftentimes will be kind of like a remake in certain ways.
There was a plan that each of these sequels was going to have one of the legacy characters be sort of the centerpiece. So the first one was Han Solo, Last Jedi is Luke, and Rise of Skywalker. Episode 9 was originally supposed to be all about Leia. And after Carrie Fisher passed, there was a rush to how they had to rewrite the script to accommodate what they could use because Carrie Fisher had passed away.
She gets a lot of screen time in Jedi, though.
Yeah, and then we have The Last Jedi, which it's weird to be in a room of four people who all agree that I think Last Jedi, to me, I think is maybe the second or third best Star Wars.
Agreed.
As just a brief synopsis of it, it's basically, it's not really, it's the center movie, so it takes some of the foundation of Empire, but it's about Rey meeting with Luke to sort of figure out her own power while the Resistance prepares to do battle with the First Order, because they've not been destroyed. They've destroyed the planet destroying machine again, but they're still there, and then now they're mad. And it's kind of this chase movie where the Resistance is being chased the entire movie by the First Order, and all of our main characters from the First are on little side missions to try and correct things as they do.
It's also, I would say, along with the prequels and elements of the original films, a very political film.
Force Awakens, I always felt, was like a kind of like a snuggie. Like, it's a very comfy movie. I can, like, throw it on, and I'm very comforted by its nostalgia. And Last Jedi is sort of like finishing that movie, and then a bully, like, takes your blanket and just, like, beats you up. Like, it's a very different vibe. It's dark, and I think it's so interesting because it takes the concept of a blockbuster and makes it about the dangers of nostalgia and hero worship and myth making, which Star Wars is built on, and its fandom is built on this idea. And a lot of the negative press against The Last Jedi is this idea that there was a big thing for a while that was like, that's not my Luke. But I think that the idea of the myth making that Luke addresses in the movie is that this is a person who did all these things 30 years ago and has now watched the universe go right back to where it was, and the people he brought up to change that have all betrayed him or been killed. And so the idea that after all of that, him going into hiding because he realizes he feels he can do nothing, that he has let down everyone, to me, made the most sense for that character with what's happening to him. I think, and again, the movie addresses it directly, that there's this concept of, he says it, did you think I was going to walk out in front of the entire First Order with a laser sword and fight them head on? And that's what I think we subconsciously want, or maybe we think we want. We want that epic battle, and we get it, but it's not in the way that we think, because it's all about the metaphor and sort of this idea that is prevalent in the movie, the whole, you know, let the past die, kill it if you have to. This movie is about moving on.
I mentioned earlier that there was an exception to when I said I like the prequels more than the sequel era, and Last Jedi is that one. I'm quoting a little bit from, I genuinely just truly just sat down and watched it this weekend. Some of the other of these movies I kind of put on while doing other things. And I wrote the first like long review I've written since the pandemic started on Letterboxd. I'm going to be less positive on Force Awakens than I think everybody else. I think it's a well-made movie, but I think it's a pretty hollow film for me. For someone who didn't grow up with Star Wars and had no connection to those films, especially the original film, it's like well-made fan fiction. And I think Last Jedi fleshes out all of those characters. I think it introduces lots of new cool ideas and dynamics. And this is a quote of myself. Most of all, it challenged what Star Wars was, but not in a way that was disrespectful. In a way that wanted to truly understand what made these movies work. It's not Bloodlines. It's the boy looking out at the horizon, wondering where his life could take him. I even have friends who like who say it's like poorly made on a craft level, which it literally isn't. I don't know. The movie kind of explicitly tells you that Star Wars isn't yours, that it's anybody's. And so I think maybe a lot of people were like offended by that. They felt like something had gotten taken away from them as opposed to opened up to them, opened up to others. And the bummer is that Disney backed down, and now Star Wars is about all the things again. It's about Palpatine, it's about lightsabers, and you got fights in the sky, it's planets and Jedis, and they're fighting.
I didn't have the emotional roller coaster or the strong reactions that a lot of people did, because I was never and have never really been invested in Star Wars. And that's just me. I've talked about it. Just Star Wars was never really on my frequency in terms of being obsessed with something. I'm obsessed with Akira Kurosawa. I'm obsessed with international cinema, the 1950s and 60s, Bergman, Fellini, Godard. I'm obsessed with F.W. Murnau and John Ford and Jean Renoir and the French cinema of the 30s. I'm obsessed with Indiana Jones. I'm obsessed with great action movies like Aliens. I'm obsessed with a lot of things, never obsessed with Star Wars. So what was really interesting to me was I saw Force Awakens and I dug it. I kind of went just to see it at the Vista on 35, but I did feel, I think you guys just said it, I was like, oh, that was comfort food. That was sort of like if I just decided one day to go get 6 donuts and eat them all. That was great. I like seeing Harrison kind of do it again. It was well made. I loved Daisy Ridley in the cast, but I really was like, wow, they just remade A New Hope. Then I went and I saw Last Jedi again at the Vista, and it tapped into me what I've always felt is one of Star Wars' biggest strengths, and you guys have already talked about it, which is that the Force is egalitarian. You can go on the good side of it or the bad side of it. It is not purely good or purely bad. It's there, but it's what you do with it. But even somebody who doesn't come from money, has no name, like, and I think Edwin said it, you've all said it. My favorite part of Last Jedi is that little stable kid, whoever that little kid is, because that's me. You know, that's me wanting to be a director. That's me wanting to be Martin Scorsese or Steven Spielberg.
And it's Luke again.
I don't have to be the son of a famous director. You know, we can argue about whether in today's day and age you do because of nepotism. But watching that, you know, if I work hard enough, and I tap into the Force, I tap into my talent, I can make a movie. So I love Last Jedi. And then when Rise of Skywalker came out and everybody was like, oh, it's awful, I didn't even go see it. So I haven't seen it. So I'm going to lay
it's
out.
Trash.
Yeah, I'm going to lay out here. I eventually will see Rise of Skywalker, but I had no desire. I didn't feel the need to complete the trilogy. I felt the trilogy was mercenary to begin with. I felt Disney or whoever was making the decisions on it, they were no longer about narrative or story. It was about making money.
I think it has to be Lucasfilm specifically, because if Disney was in control, they would also be in control of Marvel, and they probably would have done these better.
And that's not, I don't know the stresses and pressures that Kathleen Kennedy was under or what was going on. I've heard some interesting things about Mandalorian. I haven't seen it. But let's wrap this up, guys. Rise of Skywalker, what went wrong?
People complain about Last Jedi as if it negated everything that happened in The Force Awakens. And for me, and I think if you're actually using your cinema brain and not your fanboy brain, The Last Jedi opens everything up. It gets rid of Snoke, who's this stand-in emperor character. And now Kylo Ren can be the villain. And we can have a complicated villain as opposed to just a cartoon villain, you know? And it sets up Finn, who's a former stormtrooper, now has a more messier understanding of what the world is, you know? And then we cut to this movie. And even while watching Rise of Skywalker, I don't know if you know this part about it, Craig, because you haven't seen it. But Finn, probably the most wasted character in any of these films. I feel like. In the first film, he's introduced at FN-218 or whatever. That's where he gets his name Finn from. He's a former stormtrooper. He was taken as a kid and forced to be a stormtrooper. In the first film, we see him break away from that. In the second film, he has this whole side plot about, like, arms dealing and the fact that some of the people dealing arms to the bad guys are also dealing it to the good guys and really establishing a very messy worldview. Even in Rise of Skywalker, they start setting some stuff up. You know, they start talking about how there's no army. Like, if they have to do a big fight, they're not going to be able to do anything because there's nobody, you know, the Resistance doesn't have an army to go against the First Order. They also establish through little hints that Finn might have the ability to use the Force. And then about halfway through, he meets a group or whatever of other former stormtroopers who broke out. And so then we get to this last battle and he just kills all the other stormtroopers. He just shoots them in the head. Why wouldn't Finn send out, like, a Force signal to all these people, all these stormtroopers? We got an amazing sequence, stormtroopers returning on everybody, the ones who were taken as kids. But no, just a bunch of random people show up to be the army, and Finn just murders all these people. Like, I wish you could cut to, like, stormtroopers, like, being conflicted inside there, like, man, maybe I should go join the rebels. Just getting, like, murdered and nuked by Finn. I think it's easily the worst Star Wars film because it is disrespectful. You talk about Last Jedi being disrespectful. Rise of Skywalker is disrespectful to every single movie. It's disrespectful to the originals by bringing back Palpatine and negating Darth Vader's sacrifice. It's disrespectful to the prequels in that, as I said earlier, the whole reason Anakin turns to the dark side is because he wants to be able to save his wife's life. And Rey could just do that in this movie.
All right. Yeah, there you go. So a lot of strong emotion here.
Rise of Skywalker. Whatever it's called. One, how the fuck is Palpatine alive? Second, they give less screen time to that girl who's in the second one. Thirdly,
yeah, she gets cucked.
She gets cucked completely. Rey is not Skywalker at all. I got so pissed off when she say that name in the fucking theater. Fourthly, what happened? I want to know what happened. I get it. Some of the fight scenes are cool and all, but it just wasn't good.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. Rise of Skywalker has its defenders too, so I don't want to be the people I hate with The Last Jedi on the other end. But it does feel like just a mishmash of trying to figure things out far too late. Disney, as you talked about, because they hired different people for each thing, they didn't sit down to kind of figure out a core arc, which on one end I think is interesting because it allows the people that come in to look at what's been done and then sort of take it in a direction that they think makes it valuable and personal to them. But Rise doesn't feel like that. Rise feels like trying to course correct things that weren't problems that fans on the internet were upset about. And it was almost like a checkbox of, okay, they didn't like this character? Well, she's only in it for 47 seconds. They didn't like this? Well, actually, that didn't happen. Oh, they don't like that Rey's a nobody? Well, what if she's not? We can fix that still. And we'll have a line of dialogue that someone says so that it counts.
I don't care about being mean about this movie compared to Last Jedi. Because, I mean, I'm going to make a generalization and people can write me an email and I'll probably delete it. But Last Jedi, any of its badness comes from its, like, weirdness. And I think if you think it's bad, it comes from Rian Johnson maybe doing stuff you don't like. Rise of Skywalker is, you know, one of the most calculated films ever made. And it's calculated totally wrong. It's also just such a poorly plotted film. It has, like, a MacGuffin that leads to another MacGuffin. Everything in it is bad.
And to add to that, we've now got John Boyega, who has been a very vocal advocate for the BLM movement, has come out and been talking about his experience with Star Wars and been very angry with how Disney used him. In The Force Awakens, he was advertised in a way as, like, he was, you know, the first, I mean, Lando in the originals, but he was a major black character that is potentially connected to the Force. And then in Rise of Skywalker, he's completely sidelined to yelling out Rey's name. And he was upset about it. And he blames, I kind of wish there was more in depth, because he doesn't blame people by name except Disney, but he defends J.J. Abrams, I'm assuming because of the things you're saying, Craig, that Abrams was also
sidelined.
Yeah, and so there's a lot of, he has a lot of anger for it, and I'll be curious to see if more cast members kind of come out to talk about anything, because there does seem to be a lot of frustration around the way this was handled.
Who's seen Rogue One and Solo? Should we say, I have like one sentence to say.
Could we do one sentences on those? I haven't seen either.
They're fine. Rogue One is like kind of sloppily made, but it's interesting, and it's got Mads Mikkelsen and Ben Mendelsohn, who I will always sit down to watch. Solo drove me nuts. Just go back and listen to the Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade episode and hear me talk about the first 10 minutes of that movie. That is Solo, but the entire movie is that first 10 minutes. It is just an hour and a half of explaining how every aspect of Han Solo, why it is that.
Yeah, I think they're both fine to good. Rogue One is exciting because it feels like a different movie. It feels like a Star Wars movie in a very different way, and I think that's exciting, but it has a really great last 45 minutes. The first hour and a half is pretty bland because there's no character. It's just people saying lines. Solo, I actually have a sort of a soft spot for Solo just because I think that it has a lot of good energy to it, but it is crippled by this obsession with having to fill in what Connor said, this idea that we need stuff explained. There's a line in Solo that I think broke a lot of people, which is him trying to sign up for the Imperial Army to learn how to pilot. And he's like, what's your name? And he's like, Han. And he goes, and what's your last name? I don't have one. And he's like, Han, you're here alone? Han Solo. And it's just like, you don't, okay. Like,
that made me say an Edwin word while watching it in theaters. And you can see there's a version of that in the Lord and Miller version where it's like, so you're traveling alone? All right, Han by himself.
Yeah.
And then throughout the movie, like variations, and eventually it comes across Solo. And that would have been a fun thing.
I have not seen Solo. I'm kind of staying away from it at the time. But Rogue One, I saw at my local theater in Azusa. It was great. I had a f***ing great time. That was probably one of my favorite Star Wars films. It was so good. It was so great to see Peter Cushing back on the screen again. It was kind of scary at first, a little spooky. Like, this dude has been dead for years, but hands down. And Darth Vader, James Earl Jones comes back to do the voice. I'm all in, man. I cried at the last scene of that movie. I cried. Tears were coming down. Also, Donnie Yen, f***ing badass.
What's your assessment of the Star Wars phenomenon and where we're at right now?
Just, you know, seeing the reception and how I feel like Rise of Skywalker is being like more embraced by a general populace than Last Jedi was. And I'm hoping that that's not what the future is. But, you know, seeing Last Jedi so rejected just made me think this is how creativity dies, with thunderous applause. I'm being animated this one because the reception of The Last Jedi tickles some political bones in my brain that piss me off. I really kind of don't care. I want more Mandalorian. Mandalorian's the other really good thing that's happened in modern Star Wars.
There's a weird phenomenon that happens when you're not emotionally attached to something where you see it differently than people who are emotionally attached to it, and that can be helpful. I've heard a lot of Jewish comics talk about how there's such a strong line of Jewish comedians in America because Jewish comedians feel both part of America and also on the outside of Gentile America or Protestant America, and it allows them to both be on the inside and the outside at the same time. There are things about Star Wars that I love, but really, for me, it's all Empire Strikes Back. I actually don't really have a connection to anything else Star Wars but Empire. And that's just me. I admire it. I certainly, you know, respect it. I certainly fear it, using the Old Testament word of that fear, by which I just mean I don't take it lightly. I understand that it has been the reality of our industry, and you better understand it and you better respect it and fear it if you're going to work in the industry. And I feel something that, had it just been three things, would have been very potent. And now that it's 25 things, I don't know how potent it is. But I suppose the argument to that is you can always just watch the potent things. You don't have to watch all the non-potent things. And that's probably legit. I really do believe in narrative. I really do believe in storytelling. I think all of you guys do. That's why you're in filmmaking. And there's nothing wrong with making money, and there's nothing wrong with making movies that everybody loves. I think that's great. I want to do it. But I think it's got to be about the storytelling and the narrative. And if it's always coming out of storytelling and narrative, I don't see how you can go wrong. I know that's idealistic, and that's not how the industry works, but that's my concern.
Yeah, I hope that if Star Wars can break away from the obsession of connecting the dots between what we already knew, and can take the approach that I think, like, Marvel, some of Marvel's best movies are these weird one-offs of things that aren't as known. Like, the Guardians of the Galaxy weren't like the milestone comic that they could potentially now be. The strange offshoot that a director got to put his stamp on and make special. And I hope that Star Wars, it's this giant universe of literally unlimited possibilities. And to have people that can just come in and play with that under a name, and they can use, you know, things we know from it, but not have to forcibly connect it back to a main giant plot. I think you could have some really interesting stuff, because you could get move between genres and do all these great things. And I want more of that. I want more filmmakers to get to take chances. I want more Last Jedi type chances. And if Rian Johnson continues, if he has it in him, because he's gotten the brunt of the internet for the last 3 years, but if he decides to push forward and do his original trilogy that is unrelated to the Star Wars we know, I'm very excited to see what that freedom brings.
He must have an incredible therapist.
I think so. Well, and he's married to Karina Longworth, who has the best film podcast on the internet, so I bet that they just have the greatest conversations and watch great movies all the time.
Yeah, Craig, there's a Seven Samurai episode of The Mandalorian.
Oh. Also, his follow-up to Last Jedi was Knives Out, which was one of the most successful original movie IPs in years, so who really won?
Pop culture and final thoughts. Edwin, how about you go first?
No. All right, I'll go.
Okay, fine.
So video game season has begun, boys. Video game season is like the inverse of blockbuster season because the height of video game sales is Christmas. So usually around this time of year, video games start coming out. There's been some remasters, remakes come out recently, Super Mario 3D All-Stars and Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 Plus 2, but I've really been digging into Avengers, which is a really cool like team-based beat-em-up. You get to play as different Avengers, and they all play differently. It's a lot of fun. You can watch me stream it sometimes on twitch.tv/ConnorCruz. I also did something cool with Mitchell, who's been on the podcast previously. We tried out doing a quote-unquote narrative game screening. You can find the VOD, the video, on my Twitch as well, if you want to check that out. We did episode 1, season 1 of Telltale's The Walking Dead. twitch.tv/ConnorCruz, I'll say again.
You know, I haven't been doing crap. I just been laying home.
You've been working your butt off.
Yeah, that's the reason. I've been engaging in little movie time, just going home and sleep, play video games for a while.
Edwin's been basically working every single parking lot cinema event we've had. And I think, unfortunately, Edwin, I want to apologize. Sometimes when I'm stressed out, I come by and I make notes about how things have to be. And I know that you've been around for all those stressful moments and you've been a champ. You've worked the concession tables. You've been in that pressure cooker, so thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, parking lot cinema is no joke. It's a lot more work than inside a theater.
It's terrible. I'd rather be inside a theater where it's easier and much better and comfortable.
Parking lot cinema, I have learned tons from. I actually wouldn't trade a day for it. I think it's actually, I feel a sea change in who I am because of these drive-ins we're doing. But I will agree with Edwin. It is much more work and it is much less comfortable than when we're at the Vista and we check everybody in and then grab a Coke and sit down and watch a movie.
It's been a very busy week, but I'm continuing on my Bergman binge. And I've also been, every other movie, I'm going through the James Bond movies because most of them, I'm honestly not sure if I've seen them or it's been a long time. So I'm currently on Her Majesty's Secret Service was the last one I finished, which is one.
What do you think?
I actually loved it. I thought it was kind of top tier Bond.
Not kind of. I would say it is.
I think me and Craig agree.
On Her Majesty's, in my opinion, is probably number two.
Same.
It was very good. I don't remember seeing it, so it was exciting. So I'm going to continue on that because since we don't really have a clear date for theaters to come back, I'd like to have seen them all before No Time to Die comes out.
And what were the Bergmans you dug?
I'm still on, my slate for next week is Dreams, A Lesson in Love, and then Scenes from a Marriage, which I have seen the theatrical version, but I'm going to do the complete television version, I think.
We are about 40 plus days from the election. The first dates to close registration, October 1st, you still have. By the time you hear it, you'll have about 6 days left, a week left, actually a little less than a week. But please, if I randomly you're listening to this in one of the states that closes registration at the beginning of October, just go to vote.org. We registered Edwin. I buried the lead. Edwin, you're registered to vote.
Yay, I'm part of the politic game.
Hey, man, you were already part of the politic game. You just weren't playing.
Boom.
I didn't want to play.
So Edwin is registered to vote. And like everybody, Edwin, I'm not telling you how to vote. You vote how you want to vote. But I'm proud of you for being registered. And I'm proud that you're going to go vote. So thank you.
Yeah.
So that's it, guys. This weekend, come join our Disaster Derby parking lot cinema movies. Friday, we're doing War of the Worlds and Cloverfield. Saturday, we're doing Armageddon and Airplane. Sunday, we're doing The Incredibles, all at the Glendale Sears parking lot. And that's it, guys. Thank you. This was kind of an epic two-parter podcast, but we covered a lot. Please check us out on secretmovieclub.com. You can write us community@secretmovieclub.com or podcast@secretmovieclub.com. You can also follow all our social media. We want you to be a part of this film community. We are showing movies, but we're also doing original content. So just check in. We also have speakers and we also want to do exciting stuff. All right, guys, have a good day. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye. Bye.
got about a dozen more prequel quotes here that I had written down to possibly say. Used to stepped in big doo-doo now. I'll try spinning. That's a good trick. I don't care what universe you're from. That's gotta hurt.